everybody. Welcome to today's proceedings. We are scheduled to meet until 1 o'clock, so we have 3 hours. And the way we're going to conduct this meeting is that we're going to give the department exactly 45 minutes. We know that you've got a 40-something page slide. You're going to have to decide which areas to leave out if you can't cover all of them, but we're going to give you 45 minutes deliberately, because we don't want a situation where we get information overload. You've got 45 minutes to do your thing, and at exactly 10:45, you will then be the subject of interrogation by members of parliament. So if what you've not covered in your presentation in those 45 minutes, you will then have to allude to when you do your presentation to when you respond to members of parliament. And then from 10:45 for 2 hours, you'll account to parliament, because that's what it's about. You'll account to parliament as opposed to you coming to do a presentation to parliament. I have no doubt that members of parliament have done thorough preparations. And we're going to cover every aspect of the annual report from page 15 to the end. Every aspect of the annual report members of parliament are going to cover. So if you've not managed to cover it in your initial presentation, you'll have sufficient opportunity to allude to it when you respond to issues raised by members. So that's how we're going to conduct the meeting today. But just as a way of introduction, we want to put on record that the Portfolio Committee of Correctional Service has a mandate derived from the Constitution. And therefore, we have total authority. Total authority. I want to remind you also that your mandate is derived from current legislation, from the law, and from programs of government. I'm saying this because there is a level of frustration amongst MPs that this department specifically, and I'm saying it to you so that you must go and repeat it wherever you want to, this department specifically undermines these members, because some of you believe that you've got a protector somewhere else. Some of you believe you've got a protector somewhere else. We want to make it clear to you today that the ultimate authority is the Constitution, and that's where our mandate is derived from. We want to advise you before you start that rather than mislead this committee today, you rather keep quiet and say nothing. Rather than mislead us today, you rather keep quiet and say nothing. I do think that the time has come to draw the line in the sand. And this is what's happening today. We have opportunity to see the minister on the 11th, and we will see the minister again on the 18th. And this message is going to go out to the minister as well. So whatever you say here, the minister will elaborate on the basis of what the department has said today. We will pose these things to the minister on the 11th, and we will pose them to the minister on the 18th when you will be present as well. So, the purpose of this meeting is that we gave you 12.3 billion, and we want to know, what has that 12.3 billion bought the South African people? Let's also indicate to you that the minister and her deputy, in the evaluation process now, are measured by their success of rehabilitation. They're measured by the success of skilling people. That's what cabinet is measuring them on. They'll sink or swim on the basis of their success of rehabilitation, on their success of reskilling and making those people that are inside better people when they come out. In other words, we're talking about the reduction of repeat offending. That's what they measured on. So we want to hear from you, what are the specific, program-specific focus areas that you have? If your mandate is rehabilitation, what is it that you put in place for those that are serial financial diligence, for want of a better word? What have you done for those that are serial rapists? You can't give a one-size-fits-all when you've got people that are offenders in a specific field. In other words, they economic criminals, or they are violent criminals, or they are people that have just made a mistake. So we don't want you to give us a general, this is the thing that we... We want to know, what have you done to that young boy or young girl that made a mistake? What have you done to fix up those that are serial, hardline criminals? So those are the things that we want to know. We also want to remind you that in your annual report, from page 15, I think, each program has measurable objectives, performance indicators, strategy, target, and whether you've achieved or you haven't achieved your target. And in instances where you haven't achieved your target, we want you to explain why not. Why haven't you achieved your target? So that's the nature of accountability that you're going to be subjected to today. So that we set the scene for everybody, that we know exactly what is it that is coming down the line. I finally want to say, as I said in the beginning, the buck stops with you. Ms. Shriner, Moketsi, Tetsani, at least Mareka, you have been around at least for two financial years. For at least two financial years, you've been in the leadership. Others that are here might be in the leadership, but you have been here for at least two financial years. And the buck stops with you, Ms. Shriner, unfortunately. The buck stops with you. If you're unwilling or unable to implement government policy, do the honorable thing. Do the honorable thing. We consciously took a decision to take this stance, colleagues, because we're under tremendous pressure as elected representatives, under tremendous pressure. And we've taken a stance that we're going to share the load. We're going to share the load. I'm not going to be a scapegoat for incompetence of the department. And I'm advising you not to be the scapegoat for incompetence of anybody else. The buck stops with you. Ms. Shriner, you've got until 1:45 to present.
Chairperson, thank you very much, and thank you for the introduction. Perhaps just to introduce the team of people so that people have a sense of who is here to be able to field the questions. On my left is Mr. Motsekgi, CDC Corrections, Nandi Mareka, the acting CFO, Mr. Shilabani, Jack Shilabani, the acting CDC Central Services, Mr. Chimamolo, DC Director of Management Accounting, Mr. Setsani, CDC Corporate Services, Mr. Mbambo, DC Executive Management, Mr. Mkechani, acting CDC Development and Care. We have apologies from Ms. Moodley, who is currently recovering from a major operation. In front of me, Mr. Ngubo, DC Supply Chain Management, and Dr. Kutsia, DC Operations. We are pleased to be able to come and account to Parliament and to interact with you, and in that process be able to ensure that we put the department on a better footing going forward. There are a couple of issues that I just want to pick up on as opening remarks, but I will keep them short so that we have time for the presentation within your time frames. I think the first element that we do want to reflect on is that we have been in a process of very focusedly improving our planning and our performance information processes. We have, with the Treasury, been a pilot department in terms of the framework for managing performance information. We have a monitoring and evaluation and reporting project that is beginning to show its impact on the department. We've been working very closely with the AG in terms of the auditing of performance information and benefiting from the guidance that they've been giving us to improve issues going forward. And I think that is certainly going to be able to enhance our accountability to Parliament by being able to provide accurate performance information. However, we do have particular challenges that still remain in it, and one of the issues obviously is the issue of data integrity. The process of being able to ensure that the information collected from centres is indeed accurate and being able to correlate it against external or other sources of information to be able to verify it. Part of what we are up against in relation to that is that particularly where information relates to things that have a negative impact on performance evaluation, there's a tendency of people to be reluctant to report, and that is an issue that through our Risk Management Committee we are specifically trying to address the issues of enhancing our data integrity process. We acknowledge that we are still in a situation where we have a qualified audit opinion, but what we do take confidence from, but without being complacent about it, is that there is significant improvement, and some of the elements of what we are currently qualified on, we have known that it would take us more than a year to be able to get out of. But I think that we are moving in a correct direction in that regard. Part of what we have done in relation to that is to translate the management report from the AG into a series of action plans that regions and branches are going to implement to ensure that we take corrective steps to address the root causes of the audit findings. We do want to just flag for the Portfolio Committee that in the annual report there is an error in the AG's report in the section where they have indicated the functioning of the Audit Committee. That we had used the disk that they had provided in relation to that, and we want to acknowledge that there is an error in relation to that, and that the Audit Committee indeed has been functioning effectively. I think looking back over the 2008-09 year, obviously the regulatory framework continued to be refined. We had major policy and procedure development was almost complete. I think particularly the impact of development in terms of corrections policy and procedure is significant, particularly given the emphasis that the chairperson has put in the opening remarks on the issues of rehabilitation interventions, which are guided by that corrections policy. Some of the policies and procedure that we have developed will now need to be reviewed in terms of 7-day establishment and OSD processes, but we are currently putting energy into focusing on that. We do also acknowledge that there was an over-expenditure in relation to that 2008-09 year, largely an impact of the Resolution 1 of 2007, Clause 9, in relation to payment of overtime, but also in relation to elements of shortfall in relation to stores. I think what's important for us to inform the Portfolio Committee is that this was something that we were aware and managing during the course of the year. We interacted with Treasury in relation to it, as well as taking internal steps within the department to try and minimise the level of overexpenditure. And I think the Portfolio Committee would be aware of the fact that there was a moratorium for a large part of that year to address that aspect. The issues of overcrowding obviously are ongoing elements that underlie a lot of the challenges of service delivery in the department. Not that they are an excuse for not delivery, but it is a context within which service delivery takes place. But I think there have been significant interventions there, particularly in relation to the development around the remand detention project and the criminal justice review. On human resourcing, while obviously the challenge has been the migration to seven-day establishment and the refinement of jobs and the career pathing of correctional officials, we have made significant progress in terms of training of management, which we anticipate will enhance the governance of the department going forward. The moratorium obviously impacted negatively on our vacancy rate. The issue of scarce skills, which the Portfolio Committee is acutely aware of, continues to be a problem, although in that year, in certain of the scarce skills, we did make significant impact with the retention strategy that we had developed in relation to that. We want to also contextualize the information around the suspensions in the context of an anti-corruption strategy, and that in a sense it has been a necessary process as we have really intensified the anti-corruption strategy, that there would be a heightening level of disciplinary processes within the department before we were able to stabilize the department in that regard. But we are also proactively managing the suspension process going forward. So on a quarterly basis, we are tracking that and being able to try and ensure that we manage it more effectively than we have. The remand detention project is an aspect that I think is fundamentally important in terms of putting the department on a far better basis and putting South Africa on a far better basis to be able to deliver the services appropriate to remand detainees, covering regulatory framework, infrastructure, services. Significant progress in terms of getting a clear cabinet mandate for the way forward on that aspect in last financial year. Obviously, the work going forward, not a single year process. Around facilities, I think what we wanted to do there is to say that we have made significant progress in terms of our internal capacity to be able to manage facilities, as well as obviously having the three upgrade projects that we have showcased in the annual report. But I think it's put us in a far better position to be able to manage, in particular, our relationship with Public Works and ensure that we've got better delivery. On our core business part, Dr. Kutsir, when he presents, will deal with that in some detail, and perhaps, Dr. Kutsir, that's where you put a fair amount of the focus, given the questions that the chairperson was asking us to focus on. But I think there is significant improvement in terms of security. We have rolled out unit management and train people on unit management, which is fundamentally important because that's, in essence, the foundation of the white paper. Without it, the delivery on the white paper will remain a very flawed process. In terms of the offender development, significant progress in relation to that, while at the same time certain challenges. The social reintegration project has also been a major focus of the work in that year, focusing on issues around parole, clearing backlogs, and being able to look at a reconceptualizing of community corrections to enhance the use of non-custodial sentences within South Africa. Chairperson, let me stop there with the opening comments that I just wanted to flag. I think that we are comfortable that we are making systematic progress. We have faced particular challenges in 08-09. We had engaged with those challenges and tried to address them during the course of that financial year. But at the same time, the processes and experience of that year have also enhanced the way in which we go into both our planning processes and our decision-making in this year. So if I could ask Dr. Kutsir to present the first part of the presentation and then the finance team to present the second part of the presentation and to keep within that time frame. Thank you.
Thank you, Acting Commissioner, Honourable Chairperson, and members of the Portfolio Committee. If you will allow me, then I will skip the program administration and go straight to the security program. In terms of our delivery for the year 08-09 against our measurable objectives as well as the indicators pertaining to that particular program, in security we have then policies and procedures available and implemented in all the management areas. inspection reports and compliance levels are available, and we have 4.1 inmates per 10,000 escaped against our target of 4.8 for the 08-09 financial year. We have 83 inmates per 10,000. We have 83 per 10,000 assaults against our target of 92. And 3.9 are natural deaths per 10,000, and that is higher than the target that we've set of 3.5 per 10,000 inmates. Our X-ray scanners at 66 sites and access control systems and security fences at additional 8 sites were not installed. And the reason for that is the non-compliance by the service provider. Within our security program, we have the behavior modification program that has not been completed, as we have indicated in our annual report. Program corrections, that's the next budget program. We have 30 chapters of our old B order that is covering all the administrative actions and from admission to release, converted into procedures, and that has been submitted for approval. The department's policy procedures on unit management, the case management committees, as well as the registration and voting by inmates have been developed and approved and disseminated to regions. And all our centers of excellence and 51 other correctional centers have been implementing the structured day that is essential in our rehabilitation process, as well as the three-meal system and unit management. And the degree of implementation, however, varies across correctional centers. We have 146,393 offenders involved in work opportunities against the target of 108,000. 60,543 participated in correctional programs against the target at 15,704. The reason for that is partly because we had a number of NGOs, CBOs, and FBOs involved in assisting the department in delivering correctional programs to the offenders. 21 organizations in total that have assisted the department in delivering correctional programs. So then go over to slide 23. The average population for 08-09 was at 143%. The personal tracking devices not installed in 12 facilities due to poor procurement processes. The video installation project is delayed due to identification of appropriate facilities and sites. And the virtual courts operational in 2 correctional centers, that is at Durban Westville and St. Albans in Port Elizabeth. Reasons for major variances is within the program corrections, Chairperson. The variance in implementation of unit management and the three-meal system over weekends is due to the human resource constraints, but that will be addressed by the implementation of the 7-day establishment system and also the budget constraints regarding the delivery on the video postponement project. I now go to slide 25 that deals with program care, that is the personal well-being of the offenders. And just to highlight some of what has happened there, 116,115 offenders participated in social work sessions, and that is higher than the target that we set for ourselves of 101,000. There were more than 168,784 spiritual care sessions conducted against the 166,000 target. We have comprehensive HIV and AIDS programs and services implemented at 50% of our management areas, and 72,746 offenders participated in the HIV and AIDS sessions against the target of 19,746. Reasons for major variances, again, I'm just highlighting some of them. The reason why we have exceeded our target in terms of social work services rendered to the offenders The target was 100 to 1,000. We, in the previous slide, you have seen that we have reached about 116,000. That is due to the commitment of personnel and involvement of external service providers in service delivery. And in terms of spiritual care, why we have exceeded the target is due to the appointment of 7 new chaplains in regions and the training of spiritual care staff on policies, procedures, and civil service level standards. Psychological services, you'll see in the presentation that the target was not met in terms of the number of offenders that they wanted to see, and that is due to resource constraints. Our number of psychologists in the department have dropped from 33 in April 2008 to 22 psychologists in the whole of the department in March 2009, and that is due to 6 resignations and 5 of them who completed their community service. We haven't conducted the health survey due to financial constraints. Together with the care for offenders, there's also the development part of offenders, and in that regard, with program development, we had 15,130 offenders participated in formal education programs against a target of 22,000. Again, we didn't meet our target in that regard. 108,887 participated in sport, recreation, arts, and culture programs against a target of 116,600. The total national enrollment for per subject on the new curriculum, that is the National Curriculum Vocational, was 5,730, and offenders utilized in the production workshops from April to February, on average, 1,834 offenders per day. That is a decrease of 33.1% on the May 2005 baseline. In agriculture, there was an average of 2,960 offenders per day, and that is an increase of 19.7% over the baseline of 2004-71 in May 2005. So a drop in production workshops, but an increase in participation in agricultural activities. The generated cash income from sales of superfluous agriculture and production workshop products for 2008-09 was 3,330,684 rand. That is an 124.44% increase of the baseline. Reasons for not meeting our targets and major variances within program development: wood and steel workshops exceeded targets. I've mentioned that. The reason for that overachievement is the operational managers registered low needs during the needs registration process, and that caused large quantities of unscheduled work. The attainment of the egg production problems with supply of lay hens solved and units were stocked according to their capacity. The decrease in the number of offenders utilized in production workshops, that's caused by the vacant artisans positions that we had. The bakery at Bavianskoort was not functioning during the financial year due to upgrading and consequential problems experienced with purchasing of an electric cable. Vegetable production negatively influenced by excessive autumn rains in summer rainfall areas, as well as abnormal winter rains in the Western Cape. The broiler production adversely affected the Zonderwater broiler project, not successful in obtaining a tender to supply for day-old broilers. The tender was only finalized in November 2008. And there was a funds shortage with processable materials, plant production, and animal production. There were also problems experienced on operational level with the implementation of LOGIS, the new logistics system, and that impacted negatively on the provisioning of raw materials and production. Fertilizer, seeds, pesticides, and vaccines could not be procured timely, and that impacted on the production. We've also heard that in education we did not reach our target, but correctional services embarked on a mass literacy drive in partnership with the Department of Education, the Karigure Project, the Reeducate, and National Youth Services, to improve the literacy levels of offenders and the offender participation in the pre-ABET and ABET levels 1 to 4 increased. Computer-based training centers ensured that DCS has begun to empower offenders with information communication technology skills, which are normally easily marketable for employment opportunities. And the national curriculum statement resulted in a decrease in enrollment figures. The reason for that is that the Department of Education, or DCS centers, do not meet the requirement as set by the Department of Education of being full-time schools, and that affected our enrollment figures and achievement in that regard. The migration of educators from correctional services to the Department of Education due to salary imbalances, that also impacted on the human resource aspect. The number of learners enrolled for higher education and training decreased. Reason for that, financial constraints, because in higher education the offenders need to pay for their own studies, and due to lack of funds the numbers increase in that regard. I will now go over to the next slide. I think those I can skip. It's just reasons for why in sport, recreation, arts, and culture we did not meet the target. The next program then on slide 34 is program social reintegration. The Correctional Supervision and Parole Boards considered 47,362 submissions and approved conditional placement in 22,252 cases. The others are there for you to see, but perhaps important just to notice in this regard is because during that financial year, the high focus on terminally ill offenders brought to the fore again the issue of medical parole, and the department realized the limitation in terms of legislation in that regard and is engaging in that process. Reasons for major variances in social integration. The implementation of alternative strategies to incarceration depend on other stakeholders, and that impact on the targets set by correctional services. But significant advancement made in obtaining cooperation and buy-in from relevant stakeholders in that regard. And the last program, program facilities, that is slide 36, dependent on Department of Public Works to finalize service delivery standards, which informs the service level agreement within DCS. Public Works appointed consultants to undertake the viability studies for Leocop and Paulsmer in the financial year under discussion, 58 projects under construction, 12 on tender, and 14 under planning. The project funds allocated by DPW, Department of Public Works, impact on the progress that we as a department make in terms of those projects. Shepherdson, that is the part on performance, and I will hand over to Ms. Moreka just to deal with the financial part.
Thank you very much, Dr. Kutsi. I think what we will do is, because the admin and the financial, you haven't dealt on admin and financial are linked, I think let's stop at this point and allow members to interrogate this for a while. Then we'll go to the admin and financial and interrogate that one. I'm looking for volunteers. Whilst you are thinking about it, let me ask you a few questions, sir. Let's go to page 49 of your annual report. Centers, we're talking here about your x-ray scanners and that type of thing. And in your annual report you say you never met your target because of non-compliance by service providers. Are you with me? Can you elaborate?
No, thanks, sir. We could not, in fact, at a time when, at the end of the year, we have appointed a service provider who, by the end of the year, was supposed to have delivered the service providers. We ran through the process of procurement and all that, but it tended out at a time of delivery, which took us approximately 3 months, where the service provider requested extension of the delivery date from us, which we considered to, I think, on two occasions. And I think it's on the last third occasion when we said, no, let's get into discussions about your capacity. And at that point, discovered that they did not necessarily themselves have adequate capacity to deliver as per our requirements before the end of the year. They were going to source those X-ray scanners from the United States, and the company from whom they were going to source those scanners requested them to provide them with an advance, which they asked us to provide them with, and we said, no, we can't do that. This is your obligation to do that. And at a time when we realized they can't, we then agreed that we are canceling the contract and we are going to seek legal remedies. Those remedies, I'm not aware at this stage about what the outcome of those remedies are, but we're going to evaluate the potential loss to the department as a result of the cancellation and seek to claim back the losses to the department through that process.
Can you give us the details of that service provider, and has he or she been blacklisted now? Or is that service provider still doing other services for the department?
I can't remember the name offhand, but I think we submitted their name to Treasury for blacklisting.
Please indicate, I'll just ask one more whilst I was giving you time to get your heads together. Let me ask you another one. Just the block above that, less than 3.5 unnatural deaths. Now, per 10,000, can I suggest that you, in future, indicate to us that 10 people died at unnatural deaths? You know, when public reads 3.5 in 10,000, that is not saying anything to anybody of us, and I think it's very insensitive to say less than 3.5. If people have died in your custody, at least you should say 10 people died. I don't know what less than 3.5 means of unnatural deaths. We'd want to know what the figure is, and we want to know what has happened to officials, if any, that were culpable of these unnatural deaths. So can you tell us how many people, how many warm bodies died? And if there were officials that were guilty of these things, where are they and what has happened to them? And then I'll open it up to members. Somebody respond?
Chair, I don't have the actual data. What this will require is for us to change our actual, as you say, to change our target. So that as opposed to calculating a proportion of a round figure, to actually say less than 100 people per 1,000, as an example. And then in that way, our report will be able to say 98 out of 1,000, and so on. And so I'm saying we will consider changing that indicator to read differently so that we provide with absolute numbers. At the moment, I'm not able to. We can provide you, Chair, we can provide you with breakdown of the total incidences of deaths and the consequences of that. We can provide a comprehensive report for that, which I'm not able to do at the moment.
Yeah, you know, I'm asking that question. I'll tell you why I'm asking that question. You see, and I warned you early on, whatever you say here, understand that we are going to be on top of you forever, including the minister on the level. We asked this very question to your colleagues a few weeks ago, and they were able to say to us, there were so many people in the Eastern Cape, and these people were the ones that did it. There were so many people in KZN, and these were the officials that did it. And of these officials, this is what's happening. We asked the minister this question in the House. Now, if the minister is able to provide answers to Parliament on this very matter, and you come here and you say to us, we don't have the figures offhand. I did warn earlier on, gentlemen and ladies, that this is probably one of your most serious exercises that you're ever going to undertake under our guard. You can't come to Parliament here, and when we ask you, this is a human rights issue. There's no way that this committee can accept a situation where people die. People die in your custody. And you come here and you say to us, we don't know how many people died. 2 weeks ago, we asked the minister this question. Go and check the order paper. 2 weeks ago, we asked her this question. This is what accountability is about, and this is what you're going to get. The first thing to the department, we're saying that we don't want to see 3 out of 100. We want the actual numbers. And we'll buy and accept this time that you're saying to us, you don't know what has happened to, or if there were any involved and what has happened to them. I don't think we're going to accept that type of response in this department ever again. We don't think so. Especially not when some of you have come to us a few weeks ago and gave us exact figures. We'll go back into our record and we'll tell you, Mr. Moketsi, who came before this committee and gave us those figures. Because we're not sucking these things out of our thumb. One of your colleagues came and gave us the figures, gave us the breakdown, in which region, how many of those people that died were as a result of officials' mismanagement. They gave it to us. Senior management comes to this committee and says, we don't know. We said earlier, Ms. Steiner, the buck stops with you. We said earlier, the buck stops with you. We also indicated, Mr. Moketsi, Ms. Moraka, Mr. Zelani, some of you were in this department the previous financial year. We don't expect any of you to say we don't have that information. Because I don't think members are going to ask you for difficult stuff where we accept you won't have it at the top of your head, races and so on. But certainly people that have died in your hands, we'd expect you to be able to tell us. Because one of your obligations is to give it to the Inspector General, to the Inspecting Judge. That's one of your obligations, to give unnatural deaths to the Inspecting Judge. How are you doing that if you can't give it to Parliament? Mr. Madasa, you'll be one, and then you'll be followed by Paliso, number two. Fritz, you'll be three. Mdaka, you'll be four. And Mum Nyanda, you'll be number five, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to make two comments before I follow up on the security questions. In terms of the ruling party's policy on peace and security, it is stated that we shall strive for a non-partisan, professional, and security establishment that upholds the constitution and respect for human rights. That's the policy. First, and my second comment is that the Minister of Finance yesterday and today in the radio commented about the fact that in South Africa, if we are going to deal with corruption and criminal behavior, we are going to seriously have to change, devise strategies to change behavior. Otherwise, the country said, is going to destruction. Now, I also heard on radio that there were police, there's a trial going on somewhere in Gauteng of police who their informer was giving evidence, former informer, that he was upset that he was working for these cops and wanted to find that they were committing crime using his information. So they ended up dealing in drugs. They would steal drugs from the department that are confiscated and deal in those drugs and make money. So the informer was upset about that because they were also setting him up. So The problem we're having, in my view, with all this evidence, is that the crime problem is within the state. The officials are also criminals. And for me, before we even deal with these numbers and so on and so on, I think this is a major issue as leadership, both on your side and our side, because we're all leaders. How do we change this behavior? I see in your document you talk about change behavior, which has not been completed. How do we change behavior to ensure that we are not criminals, we the leaders are not criminals? Because I think that's where the problem is, that at the head. The problem was that we are part of criminal behavior. How do we change this? That we are not criminals. Criminals are not guarding criminals. How do we come out of this situation where criminals are not looking after criminals, guarding criminals? And by this, I mean, obviously, I'm not bending everybody with the same brush. I think for me, this is the context in which we are operating. And this cuts across security, tenders, management, all the issues that we are dealing with. I think this is the challenge we are having. Having said that, I would like really to hear your strategy, in other words, and how do we change this behavior? And whether this the program you have on change behavior is actually has been well thought of to deal with this aspect of leadership that is involved in criminal behavior, as evidenced by a lot of examples in the country, in media, in the courts, and so on. And then, just as a follow-up on one of those questions the chairperson raised before I come to security, on that tender issue, I hear the answer that the Honorable has given. But my question on that as a follow-up is, if obviously this company didn't have capacity, then it had to source, and then it had problems in that sourcing process, and eventually now you are going to carry a cost. You took a right procedure to cut the relationship. But the problem I have is, why was it not foreseen before they were given the job that in fact they don't have capacity? Why was this, why this came after the fact and not foreseen? I mean, if you give me a tender, do I have capacity? You have to establish that. Can I source what I claim to be able to source before you give me the tender? So I don't see that coming out in your reply. That's one. Secondly, following what the chairperson has said and the policy that I read about human rights, the constitution and so on, professionalism. Obviously, in this department, if we are going to perform properly, we have to secure, we have to ensure that the inmates are in secure custody, secure and safe custody. Secure and safe, themselves are safe, and the custody environment is secure. Before we do all other things, otherwise the people are not there. So we have to make sure that the people who are dealing with are there, to put it in simple. Now, I'm concerned about the target. The target, in my view, I don't know whether I'm idealistic, the target should be zero. Zero escape, zero death, unnatural. Obviously, the natural is not in our hands. Zero. You see, I think that's the aim we should have if we are in compliance with our laws. We can't get to a situation where now we have accepted as normal that there will be some people beaten and there will be some people killed one way or the other. But once we get into that, we're sliding. We're sliding downwards. So I'm concerned about that, and I would like to raise that strongly, that we should have a target of zero deaths, zero assaults. And then follow up again. I'll stop after this question so that other people have a chance. I want to know that as to those scanners, What is the impact of that shortage? How has that compromised security in those areas where the scanners are not there? And what is the plan of dealing with that? I'll stop there for now. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Mr. Marasa. Responses?
Can I just start on the issue of the challenges of the ethics criminality? I think there are two dimensions to what the Honourable Member was raising. The one is obviously what are we doing in terms of our own members? The other is the issue of our rehabilitation interventions in terms of the changing of the behaviour of offenders. And I think that it's important for us to look at those two aspects. What for us is critically important is that ultimately the programs for inmates are provided by our members. So if our members indeed are not perfect role models, we have a major challenge. And I think that it's an issue that we've embedded in our white paper. It's an ongoing challenge in the department. But I think there are a number of different elements to it. Part of our approach to the anti-corruption strategy is to say the one part of it is actually investigating instances or allegations of corruption and dealing with them, sanctioning against them. But the other part is the prevention strategy, and a fundamental part of that is, in fact, the ethics and the professionalizing of the department. We have done extensive ethics training over the last while. We have taken our code of conduct and the public service code of conduct and had campaigns around that to heighten awareness of that and redistributed it to our members. We are also involved in a piloting around ensuring that we've got an appropriate organizational culture, and embedded in that organizational culture needs to be precisely the constitutional principles that should inform the public service. I think that our hotline in terms of the whistleblowing around corruption is an important element of it. Both the interface between the public service hotline and our own means that there's a whistleblowing mechanism involved in it. And the more that we do investigate corruption and issue sanctions against people who are involved in corruption, theft, fraud, unethical behavior, the more that one starts to change the culture. But it's a process. But I think that if I look back on the time that I've been in the department, we've made very significant gains in terms of that. And I think that we've got tools in place to be able to take it going further. So I thought that was one aspect that I wanted to just pick up on, to be able to flag that as a very real challenge. Part of what we also need to recognize is that corruption is unfortunately internationally recognized as being inherent in criminal justice systems, precisely because there are elements that have an interest in corrupting criminal justice processes, which is different from the issues of the corruption and issues around procurement processes. But it does mean that the management style within a correctional service or within any criminal justice department needs to be extremely tight, and we need to ensure that there is a very deliberate focus on people management and on ethics and on honesty and integrity, the key principles of Butterpedia. And it does need to be an ongoing part of our program. It's not something that we can relax on. But we have begun the process and we have made significant gains in that regard. But perhaps I can ask Ms. Fonseca to carry on with some of the other questions.
Nana, thanks, Commissioner. Let me perhaps start and follow through about with the last question, because it flows about the impact of the scanners. The scanners are meant to deal with the prevention part, and the scanners, by the specifications that you put out at the time, was to be able to detect a movement of contraband into the facilities. And so what it means is that we continue now doing searching, which is a standard which will have complemented the scanners. And in many of the instances, we do have scanners across the country, but which are old, and some of the scanners are meant to replace those. So it means, talking about the impact, it means that our cost of maintenance in dealing with the infrastructure that is old is impacted on. But we are doing that work. We are continuing to do that work of prevention through ordinary scanning and using the current scanners and using searching procedures that are applicable to all inmates. I agree with the Honourable Member Chair that our target should ordinarily be zero. But being responsible for this function myself, I wouldn't want to put the target to the public, which I know that is unrealistic. What I can assure you of, which we are able to demonstrate, is that when you go to the issues of escape, assaults, and unnatural deaths, and so on, we have moved away from very high numbers. Those numbers are going down on an increasing basis over a period of time. I think we are able to provide that around unnatural deaths, I think, and the escape, that our numbers are increasing over a period of time going down. And so in view of the extent and the history of this specific set of security breaches, at the moment it would be unrealistic to say zero. I wouldn't want to come here and account for where you said zero. Why did it happen? And so on. I would rather come here and say we want to improve our system over a period of time. We will indeed at some future date arrive at zero security breaches around these incidences. It's my hope, confidently, that we'll reach that point. Our success has been very amazing around some of these figures, whether I talk about assaults, escapes, and so on. You would remember around the tender that the outbreak of the global economic meltdown occurred exactly around this specific period when we were issuing this tender. And so there was a risk globally for many of the manufacturing companies to enter into trade agreements. And this was one such trade agreement where the actual supplier was saying, we want guarantees that you'll be able to pay irrespective of the circumstances of the global meltdown, where the exchange rates are fluctuating very badly, that if we agree on this price and the price, the exchange rate between rent and dollar changes drastically, you will still pay. And that's what they were asking for at that time. And the supplier was then saying to us, you remember that through our procurement process, you will require all sorts of things, all sorts of documents, including guarantees from the supplier, that indeed the thing you say you will supply is there, is available, you have an agreement with the people who are going to assist you to provide this service. But if later on, arising from the agreement between the supplier and between the supplier and the service provider, something crops out, our procurement process will not have foreseen that. But we had guarantees from the supplier in the United States that the service provider provided at the time, which obviously was interrupted by the supplier saying to the service provider, unless you provide me with this guarantee, I'm not willing to honor our agreement anymore. That is an extent of non-compliance. To the extent that they then came back to us to say, can you also provide us a guarantee as you provide this guarantee the other side? We said, no, we don't have an agreement like that with you. And so we could not carry on. But as I say, we're carrying on redeeming, claiming against the service provider for the potential loss that we incurred as a result of us having cancelled that for reasons that it was not of our own creation. I must say the only reason I'm not able to issue, I have the name in my head, but there are three companies with the same name, and so depending on whether I'm saying PTY or I'm saying I will incriminate somebody. There are three companies now with the same name, and I don't know the specific one, whether it's LTD or it's PTY, the one that we had the specific agreement with, and so I don't want to incriminate any one of those other companies. Chairperson, we do have an agreement with Mangaung as per our agreement with the private prison facilities. We do have an agreement with Mangaung that they will provide training for behavior modification program. And this behavior modification program was meant to deal mainly or almost exclusively, with a behavior untowards coming from the inmates within our facilities. So that if we are a member of a gang, or we have been involved in assaults or anything like that, that we should be able to separate you and administer a program that enables you never to repeat that offense again. I think we have been able to indicate through the presentation, or it will have come out of our administration, that as a result of financial constraints, we are not able at that time to administer a training program of that magnitude, because it will have required every single facility throughout the country, and we will have had to pay the cost of that. And as a result of the cost curtailment measures that we implemented at that time, we could not specifically be able to enter and ensure that that agreement or that specific program is carried through. That's really the reason why we could not do that specific program. But it does not mean to be a general program that affects both the staff and the inmates. It will have been exclusively for the inmates. Thanks, sir.
Thanks. Before Ms. Palisa comes in, I just want to for you to confirm on this contract. A red light came up when you said to me it was at the time of year end. And we know the history of fiscal dumping. When you get to a situation where there's unspent funds, you just go and do this type of thing. And my question is, did this supplier get any money from us before they provided the service to us? Was there any money that went to the supplier? Or when you say that you terminated it, does it mean that including whatever payments to this department? Just a yes or no answer on that one.
We didn't pay any money to them at all, sir.
Ms. Palisa?
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, I want to thank the department for their presentation. The report indicates that psychologists and pharmacists remain occupational categories with the biggest challenge in terms of vacancies. However, of the same annual report, it is stated that a vacancy rate for psychologists was 2008-2009 financial period. How is this explained? The 07-08 annual report indicated that the post establishment for psychologists and vocational counselors was 116, wherein only 34 psychologists were employed, with a vacancy rate of 70.7%. However, 08-09 annual report, it is indicated that the post established psychologist was only 3, and 3 psychologists were employed. What happened to the 31 psychologists? The 7-day establishment was implemented 1 July 2009. What are the major obstacles in its implementation? Because there are many indications that show that the 7-day establishment system will relieve some duties in the department. Is it being implemented in all centers? If not, why not? The programs of the inmates. We would also like to know whether the inmates are kept busy the whole day, or is it per week only 1 day, or is it 1 hour, or is it in a month only 1 day, or 1 hour? Can we hear why is the morale so low of the inmates? What made them be so violent? Because in the report it is there are indicators that shows that inmates are very violent. That's why we are sitting with the gangsterism within correctional services. And there are so many programs, but I can't pick up whether these programs got a very
positive impact on the inmates, especially those who are sitting in the overcrowded facilities. I will first pause there, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Response?
Let me start off. I would just like to get clarity on the psychology information, just so that we can identify it in the annual report, so that we're able to explain it. If we could get that clarity, I think it would help. On where in the annual report the figures of the post-establishment of three psychologists?
Page 147, page 155.
Okay. Let me, in the meantime, while we are looking at that detail, I think that the critical element that lies behind the issue of the vacancy rate for scarce skills needs to be understood in the context of the scarce skills for those categories across the country. But I think that it's something that we have spoken to the portfolio committee on. But I will allow development and care to look at those figures and speak to that in further detail. I think perhaps if we could ask corporate services to deal with the 7-day implementation process, and then between development and care and corrections to speak on the programs for inmates and the challenge of dealing with the impact of programs, an element that needs to be tracked over an extended period of time, and I think requires us to have developed an ability to measure the impact. We will certainly be able to give you the information about the extent of involvement in programs, but one of the issues that we have identified in this year is the need for us to start looking at what are the correct tools used internationally to be able to measure the impact of particular programs as they go forward. I think one of the elements that we need to recognize in terms of the issues of the violence and the behavior of inmates is, firstly, if you look at the categories of crime that people have been sentenced for, the number of people who have been sentenced for serious violent crime is extremely high. So we have within our facilities a category of people who come into it already having been involved in gang activity, organized crime, serious violent crime, and they bring with that with them that kind of behavior. But I think the other element that the portfolio committee should take into account is the effect on human beings of incarceration, which in itself provides for an exaggeration of aggressive behavior, one of the challenges of being able to manage it, but also one of the challenges that relates directly to how actively involved in programs and activities one can keep the inmates. But let me hand over to the others of the team to take it.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. I'll deal with the issue of the 7-day. Yes, ma'am, from the 1st of July, the 7-day work week was implemented right across the department. There are, however, as you asked around issues of what are the impediments, there are some impediments. One of the issues we are facing is the staffing levels that are low at this point in time, depending on the different centers. So it has indicated that we do need more staff. But with the challenges of budgeting and the moratorium that is still in force in the department, we are unable to fill some of the vacancies that exist in these areas. The second issue which poses itself as a challenge on the implementation of the 7-day is the issues of the shift systems that we are using. We are still using different shift systems based on the operational and the operations and also challenges posed by staffing in various centers. But taking any institution in the department as a 7-day work week establishment that is being implemented currently across all centers. Thanks.
Thanks, Representative. I think to respond to the number that has dropped off the psychologists is because that is the number of psychologists that were doing the community services have completed the program, and the others have resigned. And as we know, that that area of service is a scarce skill. So a number of people are resigning on a day-to-day basis. But what we have done, we have increased the entry level of the psychologists from level 7 up until level 10. And we also have a hope on the implementation of the OSD. Thanks.
Can I just add on that? The figure of the post-establishment of 3 is clearly a typographical error, and we will get the correct figure and provide it. We don't have only 3 posts for psychologists. So can we apologize for the typographical error, and we will provide you with the correct information on that.
The question of inmates being kept busy and the number of days, somebody wants to respond to that one. Ms. Paliso asked, you've got a figure here that says so many people are working. Is it just one day that they worked? Is it the whole year that they worked? Is it one month that they worked? What does it mean when you say so many inmates have, or our target has been so many inmates that had work opportunities? Do they work for one day only and then you regard them as the people that are working? I think that's the question, Ms. Paliso. Ma'am, the work opportunities. I'm saying your question on work opportunities. Am I quoting you correctly, saying that's what you were asking?
Sorry, Chair. I want to know whether the inmates are kept busy, because the gangsterism is a concern. It's a major concern, and it seems to me there is no impact of moral values in especially the overcrowding facilities.
To respond to that one. And we can give you the page number. If you go to page 51, for instance, on your annual report, you say 146,393 offenders were involved in work opportunities. The question that we're asking, are these 146,000 people that worked only one day? Or what do you mean when you say they had work opportunities? How many days have they been kept busy?
No, Chair, it's not one day. You will have different categories of inmates doing different set of jobs over a period of time. As an example, there will be that category of inmates that provide work at the agricultural field, in the workshops, and so on. And sometimes some of them will change. Let's take, for instance, the cleaning of the facility. Some of them will change on an ongoing basis, depending on when the need arises. But we'll have a category that on an ongoing basis, that's the work that they do. And you will count them once. But as you change different phases, that will arise as an opportunity for a different inmate for that specific work. And unavoidably, if you look at that calculation that way, you'll come to a possible conclusion that the total numbers of inmates, the total numbers of job opportunities will exceed numbers of inmates. Because indeed, there are inmates that are not calculated as part of these job opportunities. And often that will be those that have been classified as maximum inmates. I've indicated to yourself at some point that that constitutes approximately 36% of our population. That category of inmates not do any work at all. And so that will bring you down to a figure of approximately 70,000 to 75,000 sentenced inmates that are eligible for consideration to be involved in these job opportunities. But there will be those that get involved on a very long a program, especially in agricultural field workshops and so on. And there will be those that will be involved in a very long program of job opportunities in the area of providing for cooking and all that. But there will be irregular ones that provide for cleaning, washing of cars, that are hired out to other government departments to provide specific set of jobs, that those that will go to build a church in Guguletu, for instance, which will take a period of a month or so, that will be a job opportunity for that category of people that will have gone there. The same group of people can then go elsewhere, and that will be calculated as a different set of job opportunity. That's why the numbers are often higher than the actual total population that is eligible for work within our facilities.
Mr. We'll allow for later on, but let's allow Mr. Fitz to have his 10 or 15 minutes.
Thanks. This is going to be the first round. Quickly, Mr. Chief. Yeah, I just want to start off. I think Mr. Mazinek has just confirmed our point we always make here around the cleaning service that's been outsourced at the head office while we have prisoners very near at Pretoria Central to go clean. You just said now you send people out to work for other departments. Please let them do work for DCS and save that money so that we can have that health survey done and completed. There's a very important health survey that was not done because of a lack of and constraint of resources. Now, you know, you have a lack and a constraint of resources on slide 27, and just now in Johannesburg prison there was an outbreak of measles. I mean, in the context of not doing this, and my point is almost that we have the inability to manage our health services. We don't see as priority important issues in within the department. And so, within that same context, we spend on page 127 338 rand, the last expenditure for the last financial year, increased to 660,000 on entertainment, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm saying we don't have our priorities right. If we check the one page 127 of the annual report, I'm saying I don't think our department, and I think this committee will have to look at that, is whether our annual report and our budget, specifically our budget, is in line with the objectives of the White Paper and the Correctional Services Act, whether it is in line with that. I want to submit it's not. And I want to, and I'm coming, I mean, you know, Mr. Madasa's point around almost zero tolerance for assault, for death, for that. I think it's an important point. It's a very, very important point because we are putting targets. And almost, as long as we have this target, it's okay. You know, we can operate it in assaulting people. And I'm coming to liabilities of the finance people have submitted their kind of report. But to take my point further with the white paper, it's interesting to see how many of our educators or educationists within the department are permanent people. I can tell you now, there are many article or 6 and 7 people employed, also as social workers in the department. I'm just thinking, it would be interesting to hear. I've asked the minister, I don't get any replies anymore. But it would be interesting to know how many people are actually appointed on a permanent basis, you know, not on casual labors, in very important posts, in line with the white paper, educationists, psychologists, and social workers. Thanks, Mr. Chief.
Comments or responses?
Chairperson, I think I really do want to emphasize that the setting of targets to reduce the level of escapes, assaults and unnatural deaths should not be interpreted as we are comfortable with that number of assaults, escapes, unnatural deaths. I think that if you look at the graph, for example, that is provided in the annual report on escapes, you can see that the situation in 2000 in relation to escapes was a really, really disastrous situation. And by setting ourselves very deliberate targets under the banner of zero tolerance of escapes, we have been able to make that significant progress. And I really do want the Portfolio Committee to know that the management of this department is firmly committed to zero tolerance. But by setting the targets, we are aiming to be able to ensure that we are tracking quite deliberately the process going down. Those targets are obviously reviewed on an annual basis, and where we are making significant progress, we can lower those targets quite significantly. So I think that is an important element for us to be able to get a clear understanding that the fact that we are setting a target to reduce does not mean that we are comfortable with a tolerance level in relation to escapes, unnatural deaths or assaults. Let me hand that one. I think the critical challenge of the appropriate resourcing of the Department for delivery of the white paper is a critical challenge that we have been dealing with over the last, since 2005. We had done a major restructuring in 2003-04 at the same time that we were developing the white paper, and we are systematically moving to be able to address those elements. Part of our challenge is that some of these issues are not things that can be resolved completely within one financial year. The important element is that we are seeing the progress going in relation to that. On the issue of the educators, one of our challenges, for example, is that the salary level of educators in our department and salary level in other departments is not necessarily on the same scale, so we land up where we lose educators. We've had a similar process at one stage in relation to the nurses. Hopefully the OSD process around the various professions will enable us to get to a point at which we've got across the public service a degree of standardization, and we no longer land up where we are losing people to other departments. But I think what's important is that those are issues that we are aware of and engaging with and trying to ensure that we find solutions to them.
Ms. Mdaka?
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to thank the department for the presentation. Chairperson, what I would like to emphasize is in bullet point number 3, page 21. Anyway, Comrade Madasa has covered me a lot from there. My concern was going to be around the word target, but you have already explained that. And number two, in page 23, it's about personal tracking devices. When are you going to install them? And also in page number 23, video installation project delay. How long is it going to take? It's in page number 30 about broiler production. You are saying that the tender has been finalized in November 2008. You mean you have already appointed this tender? When is it going to start? When we are talking of about the finalization of it in November, it has been appointed. When is it going to start? Thank you.
Department?
If I may, Chairperson, just deal with the issue of the broiler production. The tender has been advertised for 3 times in the previous financial year, and unfortunately we could not get a bidder, and we only get a bidder late on November 2008. That is late in that financial year, so that's why it has came. And automatically it affects the targets negatively. Thanks.
Thanks, Chairperson. I will, address two questions that were raised. One would be on the video arraignment project. We have had serious delays because of the work that we do. The video arraignment project covers the Department of Justice, the courts, and the correctional services side. But part of the work that gets done is done by the Department of Public Works. We couldn't have the Department of Public Works help us, I think, in time to upgrade our facilities for that. But what we have done subsequent to that is had a discussion with them. They have made a commitment to us with both Justice with Justice and ourselves that they are going to help us, and we are now planning to complete the work by the end of this financial year. So we are hoping that by the end of, by March 2010, all the 22 centers where video arraignment is supposed to be working, we would have completed the work. So the plans are there, the installations are happening as we speak. More centers are being completed. With regard to personal tracking devices, we will be, we are doing some work differently, and we are splitting this work differently. One aspect of it, as part of the development work that we are doing on the man detention system, the detention management system, is to put in the electronic identification of all the inmates. So we are capturing all the, we'll be capturing, and we are testing this already in Pretoria, all the 10 fingerprints and the photo. So that aspect of identification, we are dealing with it now. And then the tracking aspect of it will be what we will do with the electronic monitoring aspect, which we are going to start the work next year. But at least the work of identifying, capturing people's fingerprints and photos and for people that are inside, that work will take care of now in the work that we are doing now. So by the end of the financial year, we will be having a system that is running, and we will probably start with the remand detention facilities that are available. Thank you.
Ma'am Nyanda.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation from the department. My first question is that page 36, 58 projects under construction, 12 on tenders, and 14 under planning. As a member of parliament, I don't understand if you say 58 projects. What kind of a project are these? If you can really elaborate for me so that I must understand what kind of a project are these, and 12 on tender and 14 under planning. That's my first question. Chairperson, you will pardon me. The question that I'm going to ask is not appearing here, but I just want to get the answer. Security infrastructure, 66 centers could not install access security control as a result of non-compliance by the service provider. I think those who were there by then should know. 2007 and 2008 budget, additionally 100 million was made available. Are you with me? What happened to the 100 million? Because it was made available in 2007, 2008, available for 2008 and 2009. What happened to the 100 million? Thank you, Chairperson.
Department?
Chair, I've explained earlier on about the security X-ray scanners that we could not comply as a result of, we entered into a contract, but the service provider did not comply with the terms of that contract, and we have since cancelled that specific contract, and we are pursuing that matter for the potential loss. And this loss is not real in terms of, but it's an opportunity we have lost as a result of their non-performance. As I indicated, we did not pay them any money, but they have indeed cost us, because subsequently in the following year we did not have that money to be able to proceed with that. And so we are exploring our rights as a department in terms of the loss incurred resulting from their failure to comply. Treasury made an allocation of 100 million over a period of 3 years for security infrastructure development, and this specific one was on the last year of that 100 million. The 100 million over the last 3 years was meant for a different set of other projects, one of them being the motion detector fencing. At that time, you will most probably in the course of that year get it in our annual report that that project, that specific year, was completed, and so on. And so we have been able to use this money as per the requirements for which they have been appropriated for ourselves, with the exception of that specific one, where towards the end of the year we discovered that the service provider was not able to perform as per the requirements of the contract. With respect to the building.
Before you go to the building, Mr. Musiki, let me maybe try and better articulate what Mam Nyanda is saying. She's saying that there was money allocated and you went out on tender. So when you went out on tender, there should have been funds put aside in the eventuality that that tender was successfully adjudicated. It didn't happen for the reasons you've given us, and we've accepted the reasons. The question that she's asking is that the money that you had ring-fenced for that, what happened to that money?
Thanks, Chairperson. The allocation indeed was there for 100 million per annum for the gradual investment on security technology. But there were requirements that were made from capital to go, and because of the cost pressures that we had on compensation of employees, some monies were taken to go and fund the compensation of employees budget. So if you look at security, it was mainly that's a program that indeed we had problems, serious problems with regard to the payment of overtime in 2007-08 and also in 2008-09.
Right. You were still on the floor, Mr. Motseki. I think you were starting to talk about facilities and kinds of projects was the other question that Ms. Mama Nyanda asked, if the department wishes to respond.
Yes, no, thanks. There are different phases between the work we do with Public Works. So over a period of years, we have an agreement with Public Works to say around upgrading of projects, this is what we want you to help us with over a period of time, over the next 2-3 years. This list of projects is what we want you to help us with. Some of those projects will involve upgrading. Some of them will involve renovation. Some of them will be totally building of new facilities. So all of them will be in different phases, either in the phase of actual execution, which will be renovation, construction, or something, and others will be in the phases of the design, the drawings, and so on, if it's renovation or upgrading. So the list we are giving you here provides for the number of projects that are actually on the phase of construction, depending on whether it's a new project altogether, as an example, the building of Kimberley, depending on whether it's a replacement project, as an example, we have got replacement projects in Van Rensdorp, in Brantley, depending on whether it's a renovation, and renovation may include something like painting, reconstruction of minor elements of, and so the total numbers of all those projects is the list that we're providing you with here, or the total numbers actually is what we're giving you. We're not giving you the list, but Chair, I must say it's not difficult to provide a total list that will be able to say this is construction, this is planning. And these are the ones that are on the tender phase. It's not difficult to provide that list to you.
Follow up.
On this question.
Yes,
yeah.
Okay. I'm very much concerned. Me and him, he knows we are from far, from to this department. I reported about Nelspruit Correctional Service 4 years back. It's still leaking even today. If he says renovating, I'm surprised. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, why is this annual report not reporting on this? This information is not stipulated in the annual report, in this annual report, about the construction of the, of prisons and facilities. If that is the answer, why were we not provided with information? We are not every day in the department. We are doing oversight. So if we read, we must be able to read this thing in the report, this information in the report, not to come here and get information that we cannot. As you can see, we were busy now looking where, because we didn't read this in the annual report. It was not in the annual report. It is not in the annual report for Parliament.
You wish to comment, Department?
So I think it would be useful if we could just get some clarity on the concern. On page 69 of the annual report, we do indeed indicate the 58 projects, the 12 on tender and the 14 under planning. In the section at the beginning, we do speak on the issue of, on page 17, we speak about the progress on construction and upgrading of facilities, and in particular pick up on the four, the Bronx, Leffen, Reinsdorf, and Kimberley. And on page 18 and 19, we have some detail on those particular four projects that we are quite proud of. I think the question is whether what the members are saying to us is that in reporting on this, we should report in a way that is more user-friendly than the cryptic 58 projects, in a sense whether what people are asking for is that the explanation is included. If that's the case, obviously we can take that on board going forward and ensure that we unpack in more detail those projects.
I think that will be helpful, because if I'm reading Mam Nyanda, she's saying if you're saying you're doing renovations, then she's identifying a facility that continuously doesn't get renovated. Why not? So if you gave us a list and said these are the ones that are being renovated, I guess MPs will be able to say, why are you not focusing on that one, or why is you not focusing on that one? Okay, I'm saying, I think that's the way forward for all of us. I don't want to have a dialogue on one issue. Yeah, okay, fine.
Small clarity, because I'm sympathetic to the point that I think the Honourable Member is making around the leakages. Unfortunately, that will be maintenance. So even if we're to provide you with that list, you'll still have a problem of the leakage, which you are not able to account for in Nelspruit, because that part will be a maintenance budget which is not within the Department of Correctional Services, but in public works. The budget for maintenance stays with them, but the budget for, so Shepherd, I'm saying, will provide you with a list, whether in this report or elsewhere, about the and accounting for the part of the budget that we are responsible for. But that will not solve the actual problem that the Honourable Member is dealing with.
I think it's useful, because we are then able to redirect our questions to public works if we have to. If you are saying that it's a public works responsibility, we'll go to public works and ask them, why are they not fixing up Nelspruit or any of them for that matter. I really don't want to linger too much on this one. You'll be the last one, then Mr. Fisler will follow.
Just as a follow-up, not directly. If I recall, I recall seeing Auditor General's report. If my recollection is correct, there's a recommendation there somewhere on the issues that the department has reported of its difficulties with public works. And in that report, there's a recommendation, I can't remember now the name of the structure, that I think essentially the gist of it is that the two departments should settle outstanding issues between corrections and public works. Probably the question is, what's the progress on that aspect of that recommendation? I think that
I understand. I mean, Mr. Musengi is saying, look, these people, 4 years, 5 years now, they're not helping us, obviously, but they must, something must be done. As much as we accept that the primary responsibility does not lie with the department, but if another department is compromising the work perpetually, then there must be a solution. So my question, therefore, is as to that recommendation, what has been done about it?
The recommendation here of the Auditor General was that between us, we must finalize the service level agreement. And that service level agreement will set up institutions and the standards of performance between the two different departments. But because that service level agreement is going to affect every other government department, it's the responsibility of Public Works to determine it and then negotiate it with individual departments. We have had a series of days that have been changed around the provision of that service level agreement. The last date which we are hoping for is this year, November, that they'll be able to give us with a draft of a service level agreement that we can negotiate with.
Mr. Fisher, the floor is yours, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Chair. I think the department for its elaborate report. I just want to understand quite a number of outstanding issues that we have been dealing with in correct myself. Yeah, I think one of them, there was a time when this Kokstad prison, there was a shortage of water, and they just could not increase the population there. I don't know what happened ultimately with that problem that they had when we visited them there. Some time back, there was a pilot project by the department together with the other cluster, that is police and justice. But at that time, the integration of the criminal justice was not so effective as it is today. And I suppose the pilot project fizzled out. But there were some other prisons where it was implemented. But I think now it is the time that project can be effectively affected right through the country. Now, where there was a suggestion in trying to cap this question of overcrowding, a suggestion that a senior member of the prison, a senior member of justice, that is, then a senior member of the police, when somebody is being arrested, they must assess whether that person should go to court or not, what type of an offense he had committed, so that they must divert that particular individual. So, in fact, they were trying to curb the question of minor offenders going to court and filling up the prisons. Now, that was implemented at New Law Court in Port Elizabeth. Then we went to Kimberley one time and we saw that project being implemented very effectively also there, because we called senior members of the police, senior members of justice. In fact, there was even magistrates. We called the senior members of correctional service. We discussed that, and they were implementing it very, very effectively. The question of assessing these people entering prison, being assessed, so that they were trying to cut down the people who go to prison, who go to courts, and all that. Now, I just wondering, how far are you with that? Can you now effectively implement it? Because now there's a lot of integration of the justice system present. They're working together. So it means we can easier apply to that the pilot project. Yeah. Now, there is this question of e-security. There was an appeal from the from Parliament, that is the from the committee, that the CIMEX prison failed to be the maximum as it is, the ultra maximum as it is, because of the escapes that happened there. Then why not utilize the Cockstar prison? There was that suggestion after that. After that escape that happened there. In fact, when we were looking at that prison or going around there, we realized that it can be easy for visitors to throw something over the wall. Even a gun can be thrown over the wall there if there is an agreement. It's easy because the movement around there. It's not totally secure, that that's a prison. That was our suggestion, we're saying. Then we're saying that there was, of course, a promise that, no, this CIMEX prison, we found that it is a lot of, too much vulnerable, because it's in the center of Johannesburg. Yeah. So it's easy, there's a lot of access by people. Yeah, that's one point. Now, the question of the new generation prisons that were supposed to be built, I think there were four still outstanding. Originally, there were six. Then only two were already on the move. Now, what's the progress report on these other four? What are the delays? What are the obstructions on them? Yeah. Now, the unit management, they were saying that, you have been saying that the unit management is easily applicable on these new generation prisons, but it's more difficult on these old prisons. Now, how far are you in trying to implement? Because it has been found that unit management is the most effective in controlling the prisons and in dealing with the question of rehabilitation of prisons, because a WADA deals with a group of prisoners instead of these huge cells where you're dealing with 500, 400 prisons, but can deal with 30 prisons in one cell and all like that. How far are you in this project? Yeah, the PPP, these two prisons, the triple P. We asked them when they were here that we feel that this question of putting, of rehabilitating people who are going to stay there for many years or doing life there, is it profitable to the government of South Africa? Or why not take youth and do rehabilitation there? It means allow youth to be brought in those prisons rather than dealing with people who are going to stay there forever. Who may not come out in prison. We made that suggestion, but I think that suggestion cannot only be made to them, but also to the department to see how do they look at that situation. Yeah. I think those are the points that I want.
Thank you, Baba Fisher. Department?
No, thanks, Chair. I just wish that some questions can go to my colleagues. But of course, Chair, the Honourable Member, Mr. Fisher, is right. These are almost all these issues that he has raised are the issues that they have continued to raise with us in the previous portfolio committee. 65% of people in these two PPPs are youth, and that is is coincidental by virtue of the fact that majority of people that commit and who are high maximum fall under the category of youth. So I'm really just saying, on aggregate, there is a level of compliance with the requests and the point the portfolio committee has made, even without having dealt with the issue directly. So that is one thing. Secondly, we have said that there is a contractual issue here, where we have said in that contract that we are transferring the risk of maximum offenders to these facilities. And therefore, this is going to require some negotiations so that if in transferring the youth exclusively, the risk goes down, the payments must change. And this is indeed a matter that is going to require some form of discussions between us. We have had the discussions with the two facilities. We have put that issue on the agenda for further discussions with them. And it may well be that in the scale of the composition of our inmate population, we may not necessarily change, but just move exactly the same category, but that under a different age to the facility, depending on the outcome of those discussions. We are able to indicate, Chair, on page 51, that we are indeed applying implementing unit management in 91, if my additions are working fine properly, in 91 of our facilities across the country. And we're putting that as a figure because that's where we're able to measure. This would not have excluded the rest of other facilities. But we have wanted to know, as a matter of course, that we're able to implement this unit management incrementally and be able to put tools of measuring against it and measure performance in those facilities in a very structured way. And so our total, I think, at the end of the previous financial year was the 51 correctional centers across the country plus the 36 centers of excellence. I can't remember how we arrived, but I know that the actual figure was total 91 in total. So we are implementing that unit management. We did chair the portfolio committee, the previous portfolio committee visited Kokstad and made specific set of recommendations. One was that we must not manage Kokstad from national office. It must be managed directly by the region. It has since that meeting been managed directly by the region and not as a national project. We have, since that meeting, increased our staffing capacity of Kokstad. We have, since that meeting, increased the population of Kokstad, in spite of the problems of water, because indeed we have realized that the problem of water requires quite an immense investment on the part of the municipality. In spite of that problem, we have sent the inmates there and increased our staffing capacity to be able to manage the increase in the inmate population. I will leave the acting commissioner to answer the last question.
Chairperson, thank you. On the issue of the procurement of the new facilities, I'm not going to go back over the previous processes that we have reported to Portfolio Committee in previous years around the delays. But I think the important element in relation to this is that we have completed the stage of the request for qualification process. We have received the bids for the evaluation process. There has been a delay due to the minister coming on board appointed after the election in May and a need for us to be able to allow her to get on board with the process and be able to understand exactly where the process was at that stage. But we are currently in the process of moving that process forward. So we will be able to give a report in the near future in terms of the timeline for that particular project. But I think that it was essentially that, the process needed to enable us to provide a full briefing to the minister so she'd be able to apply her mind to the issue.
Somebody want to venture the answer to answer the question from
Honorable Fisler around the pre-detention assessment, the pilot project that has been run somewhere.
Chair, indeed that recommendation from the Criminal Justice Review Process, that recommendation was adopted by Parliament. Arising out of that was the signing by the three ministers of a protocol for a protocol for the application of Section 63A, which deals with, in particular, awaiting trial inmate, the increase in the awaiting trial inmate population, which makes the conditions of the correctional centers to be unbearable. That is being implemented and are receiving reports around it. At the time, the then deputy minister introduced what he called the Big Bang project, which required the application of various sections of the Criminal Procedure Act to try and manage the population. And around that time alone, we were able to increase quite drastically the numbers of offenders for whom we applied to court for either the conversion of their sentences or the release in terms of Section 63. Various elements of the Section 62 and Section 63. At the moment, that project is led by the Department of Justice, the Secretariat arising from that, and so they are still continuing providing and dealing with a variety of other issues that require the total review of the criminal justice. But so far as it related to the issues of population, those elements of them have been implemented and are receiving reports on an ongoing basis.
All right, it's 12 o'clock. Let's move on to the other one. You've got 15 minutes, and then the questions that you want to follow up on this one, plus whatever questions that come out of the admin, we will combine them, because we're going to have to be kicked out of here at 1 o'clock. There's another meeting at 1. So you've got 15 minutes to deal with admin and finance, and then we will ask all the questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will go back to the administration program. And that will start on slide 9, Chairperson, and honourable members. In terms of the administration program, we had 886 contracts to the value of 1.148 billion rand awarded, of which 743 with a value of 1.112 billion awarded to historically disadvantaged individuals. The guideline to deal with fruitless and wasteful expenditure has been implemented, and 6 cases of irregular expenditure reported. Asset verification process completed in February 2009. And Chairperson, the matters for qualification was reduced by 75%. As the audit report for 06-07 had 4 qualifications on the department, whilst 07-08 had only 1 qualification. No qualifications on accruals in the audit report for 07-08. The Correctional Services Amendment Act number 25 of 2008 was promulgated on 11th of November 2008. I need to apologize that by the time the we had the presentation ready, this comment wasn't in. The commencement date of the Amendment Act is 1st of October 2009, except for sections 21, 48, and 49. There were 94 legal opinions during the 08-09 financial year, 804 litigation cases handled, of which 175 claims, 235 motions, and 394 arbitrations. Slide 11 indicates the corruption cases, 247 reported, 104 cases closed, 28 cases referred to code enforcement, and that gives us a situation where 53.44 cases investigated and 46.66 still under investigation. I think the Acting Commissioner has referred to the ethics workshops. sanctions imposed, 17 cases carried over from previous financial years, 13 officials dismissed from these 17 cases, 39 cases finalized with 13 officials being dismissed, and 4 cases withdrawn before the hearing due to lack of evidence. 5 acquittals, 18 cases in progress, and 350 officials implicated in the medical aid fraud to pay back the 6.354 million and were given final written warnings. There were 6 training workshops during 08-09 held nationally with 155 officials trained as chairpersons or as initiators. I will go to the next slide, Chairperson. Slide 13. 4,713 officials inducted on mainstreaming of gender equality within the gender empowerment strategy, and further training of 23 officials on gender mainstreaming. The average turnaround time for the filling of vacancies during the 08-09 financial year increased to 210 days, and then the average percentage of vacancies for scarce skills in the 08-09 is at 38%. We have a target of 50% to keep the average percentage of vacancies for scarce skills at 50%. And I think the honourable members already alluded to the pharmacists and psychologists that are still very high in terms of vacancies in those sections. Slide 14. The external service provider that was appointed to conduct the baseline organizational culture survey and change management intervention plan not developed because it's we are waiting for the outcome of that organizational culture survey to continue with the change management intervention plan. The next part of that slide deals with the OSDs for nurses, social workers, as well as on slide 15, the legally qualified personnel and the OSD for artisans, and I think that has been mentioned already in the opening address by the acting commissioner. Chairperson, on slide 15, we only appointed 791 interns instead of the 5% of total establishment that we envisaged because of financial constraints. 659 junior and middle managers completed the middle management training. 134 senior managers were trained, 534 investigators, 310 officials trained in restorative justice, and 17 food handlers trained. Slide 16, 2,436 entry-level officials were also trained. And the rest of that slide then deals with systems to be implemented, the remand, detainee, and offender management system, the integrated corporate services system, and the integrated legal system, as well as an overarching DCS communication strategy that has been approved. Slide 17 deals with the performance indicators developed in line with the framework for the management of program performance information, and it has been submitted to the National Commissioner for approval. We will also take into account the inputs from the members of the portfolio committee in terms of issues like targets that when we go back we need to address those also. The second last bullet, the planning and reporting forum was established with chief deputy commissioners and regional commissioners, and compliance improvement plan implemented and inspections conducted against that compliance improvement plan. Slide 18, Chairperson, just give the reasons for us not achieving in some areas. So the reasons for major variances, I think that whole slide deals with the moratorium that has been mentioned. But bullet number 3, the average vacancy rate in scarce skills category is below the service delivery target of 50%. That can be attributed to effective counter-offer and headhunting strategy and the implementation of the OSD for nurses. we have mentioned that there are occupational categories that remain a challenge, like the psychologists and the pharmacists. And the reason for that is still the compensation or remuneration offered by other departments and institutions. On slide 19, Chairperson and honourable members, I think it's just important to note the third bullet, that the Department of Health issued a letter stating all OSDs which fall under the Public Health Social Development Sectoral Bargaining Council must be kept on hold until 2009-10 because no funds allocated in the financial year of reporting. The change in leadership delayed process of establishing a professional body for corrections, and the delay was also caused by a change in legislation. That deals with the administration program, Chairperson and honourable members, and I'm going to hand over to Ms. Mareka to continue with the financial part of it. That will start at slide 38.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. In terms of the national state of expenditure for the financial year ending 31st March 2009, we had an appropriation adjusted of 12.3 billion, and we spent 12.8 billion. We overspent the vote by 484 million rounded, translating to an over expenditure of 2.92%. In terms of the reasons, Honourable Chair, for the over-expenditure, we overspent because we were implementing Clause 9 of the Public Service Bargaining Council Resolution Number 1 of 2007, which was clearly indicating that there would be no time off for work performed over the normal hours that any public servant is performing within the Public Service Department, and therefore that all departments will need to be compliant with the Basic Conditions of Employment Act when it comes to overtime. Members would remember that initially as DCS we had the DPC 2 of 205 where we agreed with the labor stakeholders within the department that Saturdays and public holidays we're not going to offer any remuneration, but that we're going to give time off. We're only paying overtime monetary-wise only for Sundays. So with the kicking in of Resolution 1, that was superseded. The other portion is around item for stores, mainly the food supplies for the inmates, the over the normal inflation when it comes to food supplies and also medicines. That's what caused the over expenditure. I will then, Honourable Chair, jump to slide 49 that deals with matters of qualification. We received a qualified audit opinion in the year under review. We were qualified on our movable tangible capital assets and our tangible minor assets. And on movable tangible assets, Honourable Chair, we were qualified because we could not provide audit evidence with regard to the adjustments that we had processed in our asset register, and also that the additions that were indicated in our asset register were not actually tying to the annual financial statements, and we could not provide that evidence to for the difference to Auditor General. And also there were challenges around the physical verification of assets. There were assets that were appearing in our asset register, but during the process of auditing, when those were physically verified, we could not explain that. On tangible minor asset, I must indicate that 2008-09 was the first year as public departments that were disclosing that item in our financial statement. We had disclosed that in line with the guideline from National Treasury, but we had problems in actually providing evidence to the value of 38 million with regard to the valuation of those minor assets that were disclosed. We had the emphasis of matter on unauthorized expenditure, that is overspending the vote by 483 million. On non-compliance, that is now other matters that Auditor General reported, there were two issues that AG reported with regard to non-compliance with laws and regulations. The first one is the issue of overcrowding, which is directly in conflict with our own Correctional Services Act. and also that our HR plan was not updated as required, that annually we're supposed to update our HR plan in compliance with Public Service Act. Another issue that AG reported on was the issue around the auditing of performance information, where we did not fully comply with the regulatory requirements in that regard. We are also, Honourable Chair, indicating the progress that we've made with regard to the previous qualification board. This is not the first year SDCS were qualified on assets. We were qualified also in 2007-08 around assets, but there has been improvement. Some of the issues that led to the qualification in 2007-08 were able to address within the financial year, but we're also conscious that we're addressing those issues, that some of them will be longish term, given the constraints in terms of human resources, in terms of the capacity, even unavailable resources that we have. Especially the lower you go, the more the problems are with regard to the stability of your asset managers. One success that we're able to do, we were able to move away from many systems in dealing with assets in the department to fully implementing Loki. So by the end of the financial year, all sites in DCS were fully on Loki. But the challenge also as we're implementing Loki was that if you are not going to implement once off Loki already, the sites that would move later on for the part of the financial year, those problems will be there. And it will be a challenge to ensure that those adjustments are actually corrected on logis by the end of the financial year. Because the latest site, I think, that implemented logis was in the last quarter of the financial year. It was on an incremental basis as the capacity was moving from head office to actually assist all sides to fully implement logis within the department. And also the matter that we qualified on in 2007-08 around the immovable assets, we're able to deal with those issues, provide documentation as we promised. Also, at the time we were reporting to SCOPA, that subsequent to the audit, we did collect the documentation, so the file was available for the follow-up audit. So AG did audit that file, and they were happy with the contents, and the process was set in terms of future arrangements with regard to the audit evidence with regard to immovable assets. I must also indicate, Honourable Chair, that the financial statements as well tabled or provided to Auditor General by 31st of May and to National Treasurer by 31st of May in compliance with the PFMA. There were adjustments that were effected, which were material during the process of auditing, and mainly assets as a note, a 30 disclosure, was one of the components that we had to restate. And I must indicate again, given the challenges of immodified cash bases and the systems that don't talk to modified cash bases, that sometimes it does become a challenge for some of these. You do them manually to compensate the system issues. But faced with a situation, I must say, from a finance point of view, faced with a situation where one can make those amendments when we've agreed with AG that indeed these figures as we've disclosed are not that accurate. Between restating financials to the correct value and getting a qualification, because we're saying that no, what we've submitted to you, that's the end of it. The choice always from where we're sitting is rather restate the financials, because there would be audit evidence in that regard. It would be audited, but all adjustments you're putting through would be audited by AG, would be verified to say that yes, indeed, they're correct. We don't pass them post-financial statements. We don't pass journals that have not been audited if they arise as a process of audit differences that AG has not verified. Rather than to face a qualification, say accruals, we did make some restatements. But if you look at the materiality of the value, it would have been a qualification. So you constantly during the audit make those hard choices in terms of saying that yes, as a department agent, we agree we need to restate the figures, we shall restate. There is audit evidence, yes, indeed, we'll pass through whatever amendments that we need to pass through. I wanted just to highlight that, Chairperson, because I know that that has happened, and also in the annual report, AG has indicated that indeed this department did pass through some material amendments to the financial statement. Thank you, Chairperson. The time is up.
Thank you very much for the last point, because that's the first one I was going to raise. Chairperson of the Audit Committee, if you go to page 72, that third bullet point around your evaluation is a total contradiction to what has just been said now. So that was the first point I was going to raise, that you say there were no significant unadjusted adjustments resulting from the audit. Well, we know that there was a 61 million rand accruals that had to be adjusted because of findings of the Auditor General. So that was the first one that I was going to raise. The second contradiction, I'm just pointing out the contradictions to you. The second one, if we go to page 72, no, hold on, we dealt with the page 72 one. If you go to page 88 of this annual report, it talks about the bullet point 10, qualified it because due to the lack of supporting evidence. Lack of supporting documents. That's the reason on page 88. But somewhere on page 84, I think, yeah. The last bullet point, Scopa raised this thing in my time when I was at Scopa. And the recommendation says the committee recommends that the accounting officer ensures that there are adequate controls in place, supporting documents and all those type of things. That was a recommendation from Scopa. In my day, that was the recommendation from Scopa. That part of the difficulty we have with this department is that the auditor is never able to find supporting documents. Can't find. He comes there and there's no supporting documents. It's part of his reasons why he's giving a qualification this year. I want somebody to explain to us or give us an assurance that this thing of supporting documents is going to disappear. Let me tell you why I'm raising it. Accounting 101 that I did, ladies and gentlemen. If you don't have supporting documents, it's the beginning of fraud and corruption. Supporting documents means that you take a invoice or a proof of delivery, you put it in a file so that it can tie up with the check portfolio, the check, the balance of, or the copy of the check. It doesn't need rocket science. It doesn't need a degree. So we are not going to allow a situation where this department spends 1 cent without proving to this committee what you spent it on. Not 1 cent. Petty cash where I came from. You go and buy a liter of milk in a big corporation, you come back with the slip from checkers or OKs. Otherwise, the financial accountant is not going to give you that money to reimburse you. Those are things that we've all done. But this department, for the past 10 years, is unable to provide supporting documents. And I'm saying that that is an excuse for some people to cover up. Whether it's filling your petrol voucher, whether it's doing whatever. So I'm raising that issue as a final warning from our side. The point that I wanted to specifically raise, if we went to I think it's page 26, ma'am, or doctor, page 26 of the annual report. You know, somebody must explain this to me. 350 officials were implicated in fraud to the tune of 6 million rand. The only thing we did is we gave them a final warning. Fraud is a criminal. It's a criminal offense. Fraud of 10 rand is a criminal offense. This is fraud of 6 million rand. And according to this report, and I think it was repeated in your statement, the only thing that happened is that they were given a final warning for committing fraud. So my assessment is that they're still within the department, these fraudsters. They're still in the department. I want somebody to explain that to us. The rationale for that. It's what Mr. Madasa was talking about. This culture of just totally doing all sorts of wrong things in the department, and Nobody's held accountable. Whether you've killed somebody, it is what it is. Whether you commit 6 million rand worth of fraud, nobody was held accountable. Or nobody continues to be held accountable. We're going to change that culture. We want to know why those people were just given a written warning and not 5 years and criminal charges laid against them. And my final point before I open it up to members is just a question of clarity, and I can tell you it's because the whistleblower came to me, so I'm asking you this question. It's not in here. That this department gives blanket overtime. Blanket overtime. Vincent is at level X, for instance, so my overtime gets paid at level X. Although some law says that no, the overtime has certain categories. So you pay Vincent at that amount to shut him up, and then later on, you go and claim back the overpaid overtime. You hear what I'm saying? You give me a sum, let's say, this is your overtime. You come back later and say, by the way, you should only have an overtime of 10 rand per hour, not 20 rand an hour. Give me back that other 10 rand an hour. This is the information that I have received. I want you to either confirm or deny that. And if that is in fact the case, when you claim that money back for the additional or the overpaid overtime, where does that money go to? Because again, I could deliberately give you overtime, doctor, this month. Next month, come and claim that overtime that I've overpaid you. Don't put it back into the coffers of the department, but I spend that money together with you. That's why I'm asking you to either confirm or deny it. And what happens to that overtime that you've reclaimed? Because there's got to be corruption in this department. I'm saying it again. We are going to kill corruption in this department. If there's anything we're going to do, we're going to kill that in this department. So these are the red flags that some of us see as we go through this department. Could you answer those questions, then we'll open it up to members. We'll open it up to members again. You could just answer those questions around the contradictions. The last one I'd like to ask you, and that's why we invited you here, Mr. Jennifer, is, you know, what is your relationship with the internal audits of this department? I would assume that internal audit should be your resource. In other words, the internal audit of this department. And it's that structure that should be highlighting some of these things. Now, you're the audit committee. Is there an internal audit that is reliable in this department? Do they have an audit program? Why are we paying 20 million rand to outsource internal auditing in this department? That's why we've called you here, because part of what you're doing must assist us. And if you think that there is no internal audit capacity, you need to highlight it to us so that we could call the internal audit function of this department. But we're paying 20 million rand for internal audits. We just think it's totally exorbitant. So if you could give us a sense from where you're sitting, the state of governance and control in this department, from where you're sitting, so, and then the department could come in later.
Thank you, Chairperson. as far as, firstly, the contradiction that you raised, page 72 of the Audit Committee report, saying there were no significant adjustments, it's contradictory to what the AG reported, where they said there were material adjustments. And in fact, the Audit Committee's report, I believe, should not have said there were no significant material adjustments, because as was highlighted by the Chief Financial Officer, indeed there were, Chair. As far as the concerns, before I address internal audit, the concerns regarding corruption, et cetera, in the department, I must say the Audit Committee, and I speak on behalf of the Audit Committee, has similar concerns. We had a meeting subsequent to the annual report being finalized with a special investigative unit to ascertain what they had done regarding cases of corruption, and it is a cause for concern. Clearly there is corruption in the department. The Audit Committee is satisfied that the department is addressing the corruption issues, but there is corruption in the department. Of that, it's clear, and it is reported in the annual report. The third aspect, Chair, regarding the relationship with internal audit, the internal audit, the in-house complement of internal audit in the department is inadequate to service the needs of internal audit. And there's been a co-sourced arrangement with internal audit in the department for some years.
And currently, the co-sourced internal audit partner is a consortium of KPMG and SABNC. Specifically relating to your questions, is there an internal audit work program? Yes, there is. That the internal audit reports functionally to the audit committee and operationally to the department. There is a plan which is approved by the audit committee. Part of the internal audit or co-sourcing arrangement was that there would be a transfer of skills from the co-sourced partner to in-house, because ideally you might want an entirely in-house internal audit. Whether that transfer of skills is actually going to be properly implemented, I don't know, because internal auditors probably would more want to work for the co-source providers rather than for the department. That seems to be the case. But that is part of their brief. That is what they're supposed to do. Whether that, in fact, is going to eventuate or not, I don't know. The co-sourced internal audit partners, the consortium of KPMG and SABNT, their contract started, I think it was in October last year, and it's a three-year contract. It is expensive. There's no question about that. The effectiveness of it, however, I believe the co-sourced model, probably in the department, my own opinion, is that it is the right model. They do report to us on a regular basis in terms of progress against their plan. Obviously, their internal audit is a risk-based approach, which is the way it should be. So they're looking at the risks facing the department, and they're reporting on those risks. The audit committee obviously is just an advisory committee. We're not, we cannot take decisions on behalf of the department, but we do give advice to both the internal auditors and the department. But in answer to your question, I suppose in short, yes, there's a level of comfort, not a level of comfort. The audit committee is comfortable with the internal audit process. Entirely comfortable? No, there's still gaps which need to be addressed, and the internal audit committee, the audit committee has to address those gaps that arise from the internal audit process.
So we will engage with you in more detail as a committee. We'll invite the entire audit committee so that we can together strategize. Could somebody talk about the 6 billion rand medical fraud and also overtime situation?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'll speak to the overtime issue. As far as we know, there are controls in terms of the overtime. And there are limits that are set. They are set even in the Resolution 1 of 2007 levels that these people need to claim. But if there are any specific areas we need to look at, we would gladly do that. We are looking at a system that would want to implement in the department that controls and manages. It's an IT system that would be able to manage all the allowances that have to be paid based on certain principles, that if those principles are worked in, not a cent will be paid over and above what the person is entitled to in terms of how that system would manage it. So we're looking at that. We are at discussion levels with CETA in terms of how we could acquire that system as well. Of course, we've got budgetary constraints at this point in time, but we're looking at that. Thanks.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Just on two issues still on the question of overtime, in terms of your concern where when we then recover that overpaid overtime, where would that money go? That money would go again, same to that activity. So in other words, if I'm working in program security and I'm overpaid on any issue, when the department recovers, we recover and put back the money. If we recover in the same financial year, that money goes back to that same activity to supplement that budget that was not supposed to go out anyway. But then if ever we recover for previous financial years, we comply to the Treasury guidelines in terms of that money going to revenue because it's for previous years and not necessarily for the current financial year. The second part that Chairperson that you had raised as a contradiction on page 72 on the adjustment. What I would want to sort of clarify is that the financial statement submitted 31st of May, unaudited at that stage. Then from 1st of June, those are subjected to audit process. So as AG is auditing, so they will pick up variances and all that, those are discussed. Normally they would have what we call a schedule of audit differences. So if those are material enough, they would agree that yes, indeed, it will pass for a general entry. So effectively, the assurance given there is mainly to say, resulting from the audit, so there were no significant unadjusted adjustments resulting from the audit. In other words, all AG or audit differences adjustments, we did pass through. But we did receive the figures through processing those, and they were significant. But every issue that AG brought to our attention during the audit and on discussion, we both parties agreed this is significant, we did pass through as general and therefore stating the figures. So ultimately what then goes to those, we present to the audit committee before submitting to AG, before the 31st of May. Then post that, then there is also a presentation that goes back to audit committee on the draft audit report and all that. So AG, during the audit committee, will then assure the audit committee to say that there is no significant adjustment that it is not processed. So basically then that assurance comes from AG to the audit committee in our presence. But in cases where probably we then differ, AG will have a reason then to say, no, I picked it up, you refused to make adjustments for whatever reason. So they will raise it also in their report that the department did not pass through an adjustment that in their view are supposed to have been passed through. I wanted to sort of clarify that supporting documentation. I do agree, Honourable Chair, SCOPA on a number of occasions raised that there were clear SCOPA recommendations that came to the department. It is a serious issue. It is a serious concern that we have had. We've made some inroads, as I've indicated before, that if you look at where we're coming from, some of the issues are no longer qualified for the work inroads that we've made. And basically, in terms of that one, Chairperson,
I'm sorry, Honourable Member. I'm worried about the time. What I would like to know is she responding to the 6 million? Because we're still having questions here around the admin. Now, you know, time is against us. Thank you.
We will, let's leave that one, but respond specifically to the 6 million so that because members seem to have other questions that you could answer some of these things that you're trying to answer. Does somebody want to explain page 26 of the annual report?
Chairperson, from what I can remember of it and if Central Services can assist, that would be appreciated. But I think this relates to an investigation done by the DSO ourselves and eventually the SIU coming on board as well, in which we were investigating very, very widespread medical aid fraud, which actually involved organized medical aid fraud. There were criminal cases that came out of it. There were a number of people who had been involved in the actual organizing part of it who did face criminal charges going out of it. This category of people are the people who were the small fry in that process. So I'm not saying that it's not correct to question whether they got final written warnings, but I think there was a major investigation that had far bigger elements that are not reflected in this financial year because, in fact, they've been addressed.
No, that's fine. Could you supply this committee with the nature of offence for all those that received written notices? So you'll say to me, Vincent received a written notice because he only took 5 rand, that type of thing. We accept that the 6 million might not apply to all of them, but by end of next week, we'd want to know, for those that you've given written warnings, what was the nature of their claim? Because the question we're asking you is,
how do you distinguish who do you fire and who don't you fire? Because fraud is fraud, whether it's 1 rand or 100 rand. That's the question that we're asking. Let's open up to members for questions. We will take Ms. Ndaka first, Fritz second, Madasa third, Faliso fourth, Nyanda first.
Thank you, Chairperson. In page 12, the member is saying they were given final written warnings. If you are talking about final written warning, you know, according to my knowledge, it means that there were warnings before. Maybe first warning, second warning, and then this one is the final warning. So, okay. So, I would go back to Chairperson's question because I've also marked this. These 350 officials, much as the Chairperson said, you must give us a written report. Aligning myself to that. But, Chairperson, I have a question mark on these 350 officials. Of this final, the word final, it means that if you can do something wrong, they can fire you. So if these 350 officials were given final warnings, can you explain to us what have they done before so that we can make a follow-up of opening or reopening this case of 350? It's not a pop and place, this one. Because maybe by December, we are approaching festive now. 400 officials can do the same thing, knowing that the department is going to give them the written warning. You know, it's not a game. It's not a circus. This department is, if it was a circus before, when is that time? We are not going to play marbles here. And the second question, Chairperson, is around about, it's around about 886 contracts to the value of 1.1 billion and 743 with a value of 1.1 billion awarded to historical disadvantaged individuals. If you can change caps, you take my caps as the member of parliament coming from the rural area. Maybe somebody from the community come to me and ask, who are these historical disadvantaged people or individuals? Which answer do you expect me to give that individual? Who are these people? If you can tell us, who are these people? Because we don't know. Everything of yours is under blanket. We must dig. You must dig yourself. You must dig the information from yourself. You don't tell yourself that you are working with the politicians. We don't have your skills. You are working with the laymen. Others are coming from the other departments. Other what? You know, and Chairperson. What about the 143 contracts? You have said nothing. Only 742 that was awarded to these disadvantaged individuals. That I want to know, who are those people? What about the 143 contracts? Number last, six cases of irregular expenditure reported. What are these cases? Longe ixesha nifuna sokusibuzwa yintoni ke ngokulena, yintoni ke ngokulena. Chairperson, I'm sure this is the time for this committee to launch Operation Boxa. Kunzima kule department. Sizawukhekelwa zizikazi apha. Omnye is saying this, and then next week kuzabanye, and then baphinde bafike neyabo into. Operation Boxa apho ke kuvunguzwe le department yenzakele. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. My concern centers around, I think it's page 148. It says that for the year, according to the annual report, the Department of Correctional Service incurred liabilities in excess of 988 million rand as a result of bodily injury of stroke assault. Now, this amount, Mr. Chair, constitutes 74% of the total claims against the department, being 1.7 billion rand. It is further noted that this amount increased more than tenfold between 2007-2008 to the current level. It's almost an increase of 81 million rand. Now, the one question I want, or three questions I quickly want to ask, what is the nature of these liabilities? What proportion of the liabilities in respect of bodily injury are A, unadjudicated claims, B, claims settled out of court, C, amounts awarded by the court to the claimants? Two, what are the reasons for the tenfold increase in liabilities incurred as a result of these claims related to bodily injuries? And I think Mr. Mataka, he asked a similar question in relation to the assault. And three, what steps have DCS taken to recoup the cost of claims against DCS officials who have been found liable in law for the losses or damage suffered? And this is specifically in relation to the Public Finance Management Act, which states losses or damages suffered by a department because of an act committed or omitted by an official must be recovered from that official if he or she is liable in law. So thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I'll stick to that. I have another question on stocks, but I think in time I want to stick other people also.
Okay, because time is against us, we'll take Mr. Madassa and you'll respond to those, and then we'll come to the next two. Mr. Madassa.
Chairperson, just to understand, in terms of the policy on misconduct, I think the Chairperson asked a question. I'm just following up. And this will relate probably to the capacity of your legal department. What is the policy with regard to what are dismissible offenses? So which offenses, if you commit them, the person is warned, and so on. Is there a policy like that? Because I think that is what will help us. If it exists, then we can examine that if it's sufficient. If it doesn't exist, then we can require that it does. Because, I mean, I'm reading up there, that line there, talking about breaking the cycle of crime. And I think that is the issue that the department is benchmarking, the department has put for itself. Because the issue of compensation, I mean, that is a mitigating factor. Sometimes not, but generally it's a mitigating factor if you pay back something that you have stolen. But it's not; it does not distract from the fact that you are criminally liable. But it goes to the issue of the sanction, having been found guilty. So I think, but I cannot make those judgments unless I understand the policy. I think before I make any judgment on the department. Thank you.
So one line. Let's take Paliso and then Nyanda, and then we will respond to us.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, we know that there are discrepancies with regard to total numbers of employees of the department. On program administration, page 30, the report indicates that department had 41352 employees, whereas on page 162. The report states that the total number of employees, including employees with disabilities, were 41343. There is a need for quality control in reporting the content of errors are being observed in this report. I've got one question, Chairperson. Can DCS confirm if they requested an amount of 231062 million to Treasury, but only received 223.7 million? That was a resolution 1 of 2007. And was allocated in 2008-09. Since this OSD for officials was not paid in 08-09, but was only paid in June 2009, what happened to an additional 223.7 million allocated by Treasury in 2008-09? I want clarity on that one.
Thank you, Chairperson. Qualification on movable, tangible minor asset. I just want to find out from the department why you spend 38 million, not a single document. Why? It's a big question mark. I need a relevant answer from this one. And my second question, overspending. 483 million. You went back to the treasurer after spending this money. You asked for 310 million, and treasurer didn't approve that one. You wanted an additional money from the treasurer. What was the purpose? Can you please explain? Thank you, Chairperson.
Department. Anyone, any order, doesn't matter. We really have little time. Will be kicked out here in the next 10 minutes, so you can answer in any order.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the matter raised by Honorable Madasa, we have a disciplinary code and procedure which we can make available, which also outlines exactly which are the offenses and under which circumstances, which ones will be a summary dismissal and so on. So we will make that available. And on the OSD...
By the end of next week. It's a document that you must send to us. That one you can get.
It's a document you can send. And on the OSD matter, as we indicated, as the CFO indicated in the presentation, that the Treasury did not allocate any funding to us for the overtime. And as a result of Resolution 1 of 2007, so that allocation in the money, we went to ask from Treasury, and what was ultimately allocated was for the payment of that overtime resulting from the implementation of Resolution 1 of 2007. Where previously we were giving people time off, and Clause 9 categorically stated that no overtime will be compensated through time off. People must be paid. So that was the result of us asking for that budget. It was not for the OSD, but it was for the payment of overtime in terms of Clause 9 of Resolution 1 of 2007.
Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of the question on the contracts that we've awarded and the difference on that, the 743, indeed, they went to HDI. We can provide, Chairperson, the names of those companies and the contract value that each company benefited from the department. HDI, in terms of broken down to how many contracts went to women, black women, disabled and so forth in terms of the body report monthly to Treasury also around that. Those details can be provided to the Honourable Chairperson. And the difference of Fund 43, it basically did not go to HDI. It went to previously empowered companies. So basically that's the interpretation around that one. On the irregular expenditure, Chairperson, we have disclosed...
Hold on. Are you requesting a list of the HDI? Okay.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. With regard to the irregular expenditure, Chairperson, it is the cases that we're referring to, like the five cases of irregular expenditure. They are detailed. I'm looking for the page number in the annual report on irregular expenditure. It should be noted. I'll get the page number, Honourable Chair, in terms of that. So each the case is indicated, the incident that led to the irregular is indicated. I'll just get the page number, page 134, to say what exactly happened in terms of each case. So we do give details in the annual report. With regard to the over expenditure,
just on that one. No, it's fine. As well, I mean, all your answers are saying investigations pending. Can you give us a progress? Not now. It just says investigations pending. This is a while back. If you, in your responses, indicate the progress of that investigation.
We'll do that, certainly, Honourable Chair. With regards to the overspending of the vote on overtime, indeed, as a department, we knew, we projected that, and we even made a cabinet memorandum requesting an additional 544 million, and that did not flow. It did not come to the department. The request was not approved. So that's why. But there were measures even before that we implemented the department to scale down the impact of overtime. Introducing moratorium, in other words, not filling vacancies within the department so that you can be able to downscale the impact of overtime. There was an amount of money that was allocated as an adjusted estimate in 2008-09 that we had received, 460 million for compensation of employees. But that was not for overtime. It was an inflation adjustment on compensation of employees. If members may recall, the general salary increase for 2008-09 was way above what was in our baseline budget as departments with regard to inflation. So there was an adjustment that was made in that regard. What was finally concluded with labor was 10.5%, I think, but in actual fact, in our baseline, we had on average 7%. So that difference was the difference that became a cost pressure. But that 460 million was not for overtime. It was for inflation adjustment. For overtime specifically, there was no additional allocation that we received. We made an application to Cabinet Treasury Committee, but the response was not approved.
Three outstanding questions. What does final warning mean? Bodily injury recoveries, does it mean that you're claiming that money from somebody? And why are the totals on page X different to totals on page Y? And the example being used is total staff complement for the admin. It's again part of the integrity of the information in this report. Could people answer those questions?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Yes, it's really regrettable. We would work on that, the integrity and the comparison of the information. I think it's systems that are letting us down, and the manner in which the information is gathered and captured, where the one system doesn't check the other, whether you entered correctly. But we'll work on that, and we'll check that. The issue of the final warning, it is in terms of the disciplinary code that I've referred to. Written final warning does not necessarily mean that there were other warnings given before. It's a sanction that is very close to a dismissal. So it is a sanction on its own, so that within a specific period, if the person is found to have committed the same offense, and then that person would face dismissal.
So it is a sanction that is determined by the weight of the case, and then the presiding officer or the chairperson of a disciplinary hearing would say, I'm giving a final written warning. So it doesn't have to have a prior other warnings given. Yes, thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. That one, of course, is claims that have been made against us. It's not necessarily claims. It's not claims that we have settled. People have been either assaulted in our facilities or, maybe some of them by members, others inmate on inmate, and they have made claims. Some of the claims, I think, in the last financial year, I think one of the claims have been quite scary, into the hundreds of millions. That's why there is that huge increase on the claims. But we can provide information on each and every one of those cases.
We don't want information on the cases. I think the point we're making is that if this department incurs costs because of negligence from your side, the PFMA is very clear that money must be recouped. And the question that is being asked, are you guys doing that? If not, you better send the message out. That if anybody is guilty of costing the department, Ms. Reiner, if you don't collect it, we will throw the book at you. I think that's the message that Mr. Fritz is sending. We want to, for exactly 1 minute, maybe thank the department for this robust interaction. It's going to continue for a long time. I think you get a sense of where the committee is at in terms of ensuring that at least we are not found guilty of being incompetent in our role as oversight. There are no sacred cows. There are no sacred cows from our side. We're going to interrogate every matter regardless of who it's going to impact. So we thank you very much for that. But I finally want to say the worrying part also is that the integrity of this thing, in terms of the information, for us is very vital. We don't want to get into how much does it cost per book and how many books have you printed, but the contradictions that Ms. Paliso raised, I picked up quite a few also, and I thought, well, let me not put you under more pressure. But as an example, for instance, if you... And you see, these are matters that make us worry. I want to just highlight one of the contradictions in terms of the integrity of this document of yours. I'm looking at the wrong one, I beg your pardon. Just go to page, and I don't want you to answer it, but we want to indicate the concern, and also to send indicate to you that this department or this committee certainly does its homework. If you go to page 152, 153, table 2.1 gives you personnel expenditure, and it says 8 million or 8 billion. If you add table 2.3 across, not down, if you take all the downs and you add them across, gives you about 6.5 billion. Understand what I'm saying? And these are supposed to be the same things, just given in different formats. They're both personnel costs. The one gives you 8 billion. And that's what you run with throughout your stuff. But when you go to 2.3, somebody must go and do that homework. Do the total of table 2.3. It gives you only 6.5 billion. We could have asked the question, where's the difference? Maybe it's a typographical error. We'll accept, we'll give you the benefit of the doubt in this instance, but we won't give you the benefit of doubt in that instance because you can't submit this report to South Africa Incorporated with so many basic errors. I think that's the point we want to make. Ms. Reiner and your team, thank you very much. We see you again on the 18th, your final interaction with us for the administration. We can also just indicate to you that we are inviting the minister to that one. So what do you say? We'll look at the minister. She must respond because ultimately she must also take accountability for what's happening in this department. So we'll meet you on the 18th. Together with the minister, and we have our final quarterly standard administration conversation. Members of Parliament for their preparations, thank you very much. We meet next week to do the same with the inspecting judge. Thank you very much, and also to our guests and visitors. Thank you so much. The meeting is adjourned.